Welcome to week and module 4 on software engineering. This week, we'll focus on more modern processes. However, as I say this more modern, please remember that the waterfall model and the traditional iterative and incremental development processes are still in use in many places, so they are still relevant. They are not at all completely outdated. But this week, as I said, let's turn our attention to modern software development processes. What they have in common is basically that they are different variations of iterative and incremental development, typically, however, with shorter iterations than in the traditional models. Many modern processes are known as agile software development, and that's what we will talk about next. Among other things, agility refers to the idea of being more responsive to changes in requirements or technology during development. And this is often implemented through shorter iterations and higher degrees of automation than in more traditional processes. So, agile development is basically a group of processes that have enormously impacted software development since they were introduced in the early 2000s. And they were introduced by a huge marketing push by a group of consultants who joined together for a seminar and wrote what is known as the Agile Manifesto. This was written in the year 2000, and it was intended as a way of expressing a new mindset to software development, where the focus would be on the actual development instead of planning and documentation and process-heavy approaches, like in the traditional models. So this is, in a way, to counter the traditional way of writing lots and lots of documents before writing software or as part of that. And this Agile Manifesto then states, as you can see here, that we are uncovering better ways of developing software by doing it and helping others do it. And through this work, we have come to value. And then they state the values of agile software development. And they are individuals and interactions over processes and tools. Working software over comprehensive documentation. Customer collaboration over contract negotiation. Responding to change over following a plan. And that is, while there is value in the items on the right, we value the items on the left more. So what do they mean by these values? Really briefly, the focus on individuals' interactions. By that, they stress the importance of face-to-face, or these days perhaps video conferences, face-to-face direct interactions between people rather than writing documents or having processes and tools responsible for communication. So they really stress the need for getting people together when they develop software. And the second one, by focusing on working software. The idea was here, as opposed to the waterfall model, where you look at the production of documents as progress and you build the software in the end. Here, the idea is to build software as quickly as possible and then evolve it towards the final product. And this way, being able to accommodate changes to requirements along the way. And also, another important idea here is that to use the amount of working software, and working software here defined as running tested features, as the ideal measure of progress. So you can always ask, well, how many of the features that we have promised or plan to implement are already working? That gives us a good and safe measure of progress, rather than saying that we have now finished the specification stage in a waterfall process. We are, 20-30% done. So here the focus is done is only something that implements and works and already works, not, for example, the production of a document. And historically, many waterfall-based projects have failed spectacularly, running over budget and schedule and ending up in court. The consultants here behind the manifesto wanted to stress that working together with a client to produce a piece of software that actually fulfills their need should be the focus, rather than focusing on writing and negotiating very strict contracts and then solving problems related to them in court. And the final value here, to focus on responding to change over following a plan, is in a way a little bit similar. Here the idea is to work with processes that are able to accommodate requirements changes, producing software, showing it to customers, taking that feedback into account, and this way iterate towards something that serves the client's need rather than rely on perfect upfront planning. So in practice, this means adopting what's called an own-in project management as role and way planning. And the idea here is you have a detailed picture of the near future and only higher level plans for whatever is further ahead. And then, of course, they have this catch-all final line here, kind of a disclaimer saying that, yeah, we understand that the items on the right are still needed. And that is obviously the case in the real world. So this manifesto has been extremely widely communicated and the ideas adopted. And obviously, since it has been so successful, it has also been widely criticized, also very in a very, very fair way, and criticized to more represent a great marketing message than actually changing the way software is developed. But in practice, the message and the methods related to agile development have been hugely impactful for how software is developed in the modern world. As you remember from the paper on the history of agile and iterative and incremental development, there is really not that much new things that we didn't know before in agile software development. But what happened was that this gang between the agile development, they were able to package things that were already known to be good practices and market it in a way that actually made a difference to how software is produced today. So in addition to this general declaration, these consultants also defined 12 principles that they considered important for any method to implement if it wants to call itself agile. In this short lecture, we will not look at all of these, but rather I want to focus on one really important guiding aspect, which is time boxing. We'll approach time boxing through the so-called project management iron triangle, which identifies the relationships between cost, scope, and time, and you can also see quality here in the middle. So there are basically four variables: cost, scope, time, and quality. And to the left in the picture, you can see how it's approached in the waterfall model, here referred to as a plan-driven approach. The idea here is that you fix and freeze the requirements. So you define the requirements and then you freeze them, so the scope is fixed. What you decide to implement in the beginning of the project, that is what you will implement. And this means really that you end up with risks regarding cost, time, and quality. So if your plan is not perfect, and you need to make compromises, then the compromise is never made with respect to the content. It's always done with respect to cost, time, or quality. So in practice, we will develop whatever was promised. And when we have problems, we will need more time and resources to develop whatever we promised, or we need to start lowering the quality requirements for what we are doing. So this is a reason, since planning is inherently difficult in software engineering, and if we stick to this model of working, really sticking to developing everything we thought we needed to do in the beginning of a project, then we have often end up with these schedule and cost overruns. On the right, you can see how agile development, in a way, turns this idea on its head. So in agile development, the idea is that we fix the time. That is when something will be delivered. And we have a defined number of people allocated to development, and that also means that the cost is fixed. So we know how long we will work, and we know, therefore, how much it will cost. What we don't know, what we let vary, is the scope. That is what exactly we developed and gets included in a release. You might remember this from the Microsoft Sync and Stabilize model that they utilized in their Office division. Not all features that they might initially think of as ending up in the next release of Excel or Word, whatever, actually made it, but because they were able to flex on scope. So the idea here is, as in iterative and incremental development in general, to focus on delivering value by having a prioritized list of requirements and implementing the most important features first. And if time runs out, you can leave less important features out. So in practice, this way of working is seen in agile methods through the use of time boxing. That means fixing the end date for iterations. So we define the date and the length of the iterations, and these won't change. They are always the same. For example, in Scrum, the sprint cycle is typically 2 to 4 weeks. So as we know the exact date when a sprint, that is an iteration, will end. It will end every second, third, or fourth week, regardless of how much we actually have been able to accomplish during that sprint. And the idea here is that with short fixed iterations, we can reduce the complexity of planning, we can get faster feedback, and we can increase the success rate of development. And when things get tight, well, as they always do, even in short iterations, we reduce the scope. That means in practice moving something to the next iteration rather than letting the ship date slip. And some lower priority features might even be removed and put back on the wish list. The waterfall model is also infamous for having people work overtime just before release to meet the deadline. In agile development that relies on time boxing, we don't need that. We just scope things out, move them forward, and keep working on a sustainable pace, which is actually one of the 12 principles in agile development. Okay, so as I said earlier, agile development relies on different kinds of short iterations. And just to get a look on what that can look like, here you can see a picture showing different levels of short and longer iterations in extreme programming, which was one of the most famous agile models when agile was new. It's not that widely adopted per se these days, but many practices introduced by extreme programming XP are still widely in use. And here in this figure, we can see 7 loops at different levels. We'll start from the top and work our way down from the slowest to the fastest loop. So the top level is the release plan loop, in which we plan and implement a release and release new versions of software. Here in this model, this is typically done within a time frame of months. So, and each release is split into iterations that work on a cycle of a few weeks. Looking at the next cycle, several times per week, we can run acceptance tests that run the whole integrated evolving software system and test it. The whole team has a daily so-called stand-up meeting in which they discuss the status. Where are we? How are we doing with development? And this practice is now widely used, as it's also was adopted, for example, by Scrum, which is the most widely used agile process today. At the level below, dailies, we have pair negotiation, and this refers to the use of a practice of pair programming. Pair programming is a practice in which two developers sit together at one single computer, developing the code together. While this is a somewhat controversial practice, pair programming has been shown to be very good for onboarding of new employees and for learning. Pair negotiation means that you swap your pair, the person you are working with, a few times per day. And the cycle for this is thus a few hours. The next level below is then unit tests, where we have unit tests that are run within minutes. That is, every time we check in some code or compile it, we run automated unit tests. And XP promotes a practice called test first, in which we actually write the automated unit tests before the actual code that they test. We'll talk more about this practice of test first and other testing practices that are closely integrated to coding in the module on testing in a couple of weeks. And as I said, pair programming is a development practice where they sit together at the one computer, and that's then the next level, the lowest level of feedback, where you have a feedback within minutes. It's very short. You discuss with your peer all the time what you are coding. Well, so these are just some of the feedback loops to show you the ideas in agile development to have quick feedback loops and many at different levels. There's a lot more to know about extreme programming, XP. Feel free to look it up on the internet. If you are interested, there are both videos and material, lots of materials available about XP and the various XP practices. So even though XP, as I said, is not that widely adopted on its own these days, many of the practices made popular by XP, for example, test first and pair programming, are still widely used in different places in industry today. But now, next, let's take a look at the most widely adopted Agile framework today, and that is Scrum. If you have taken the software project course, which is compulsory for all computer science students, you are already familiar with this process. So in this lecture, I'll give a very, very brief overview. Your readings will include the Scrum guide, which is the official documentation for the process, and therefore it's very good to know. And if you are completely unfamiliar with Scrum and you want to read something that describes Scrum in a few more words than the official guide, but in a more pedagogical, more easy to understand manner, I refer you to the Scrum Primer that I added to the module as an optional reading. But now, let's do a quick walkthrough together of the Scrum model. You can see Scrum here at a high level in the picture. First, you can see here that we have a few important roles in Scrum. We have the roles of a product owner, a Scrum Master, and then we have the developers. The product owner, that's the person who owns the goal of the whole development undertaking, as well as owns the requirements, the list of requirements, that is everything that we need to do, everything that needs to be done for developing the piece of software that we work on. And this requirements list is prioritized, and it's known as the product backlog. So the product backlog is basically a prioritized list of everything that we would like at some point in time to include in our product. And this is the responsibility of the product owner to maintain and prioritize this list. The next important role is Scrum Master. The Scrum Master is responsible for ensuring that the Scrum process is followed. So this is the person responsible for handling the various meetings, facilitating the meetings during the process, for coaching the team members on how Scrum works, and for removing impediments to the team's progress. And then finally, developers, they are responsible for participating in the process, developing the software in the agreed manner and to the agreed quality, and to do all of that in a professional manner. The overall process flow in Scrum is really simple. We divide development, just as in XP, into iterations. An iteration in Scrum is called a sprint. The length of a sprint in Scrum varies by organizations. It can be as little as 1 week, but most typically it's between 2 and 4 weeks. So 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and 4 weeks would be typical sprint lengths that you find in industry. And the purpose of a sprint is, as in normal iterative and incremental development, to develop a piece of working and tested software. So at the beginning of each sprint, the product owner, together with the developers, conduct sprint planning. So sprint planning is when they look at the whole product backlog and pick the features, the basically backlog items from the top of the list that they plan to develop in the next sprint. And this then forms the sprint backlog. The sprint backlog is then refined into tasks by the team, where they also estimate and make sure that what they plan to include in the sprint is as realistic as possible. And at the end of sprint planning, the team and the product owner have a common understanding of the goals and the contents of the next sprint, the next iterations, what they will work on for the next few weeks. Then during those weeks when the sprint is running, the developers self-assign to tasks, and then they meet daily in a daily Scrum meeting. The daily Scrum meeting now is similar to the stand-up in meeting in XP that we talked about previously. The daily Scrum meeting is not allowed to last longer than 15 minutes. This purpose of this meeting is to synchronize the stages of the development within the team. So the current Scrum guide allows the team to define the details of the meeting. But traditionally, each developer has answered three questions. One, what are you working on? Two, what will you work on by tomorrow? And three, do you have any problems? And at the end of the sprint, there's a sprint review. And during this sprint review, the outcome of the sprint is examined, often in the form of actually showing the software, demonstrating it to the product owner and to any other interested stakeholders. And finally, the team will conduct a sprint retrospective during which the previous sprint is analyzed and some ideas for improvements are raised, so the team this way continuously tries to improve its own way of working. So as I said, the typical length here of a sprint is 2 to 4 weeks. And this means that there should be a new working version of the evolving software at that pace. And well, naturally, this way of working requires quite a lot of tool support for compiling, building, testing, and deploying the software. We'll return to tooling later during the course. And one more thing I need to talk to you about when it's related to Scrum is that this process, as you see here, we talk about the team. So this is typically built for the size, the software that you can develop with one single team, with 7, max 9 people, typically 5 to 7 people. If we have a bigger piece of software, then we need to scale agile. And that's something we'll talk more about later in the course, how we work when we have big pieces of software that needs to be developed by a larger number of teams. We can have tens of teams, 20, 40 teams working using Scrum on the same piece of software. So we'll get back to that later in the course when we'll talk about scaling agile. Okay, but now let's next move on to thinking about skipping the concept of iterations completely. And that takes us to another process known as Kanban. And this is something we can do if we have a way of working with tool support that continuously can build, integrate, and deploy our software. Then we can basically drop iterations and move into a continuous way of developing software. So we shift the planning and execution from iterations to actually only planning individual requirements or individual backlog items. And the most common way of managing this kind of development is Kanban. Kanban is a concept and system that is adopted from lean manufacturing. You have a reading about lean software development that also describes Kanban. So basically, Kanban is very simple. You have requirements, here in the picture, to-dos, in a prioritized list. And each requirement moves through a set of states that you depict here in this picture. You can see progress, testing, and done. To-do progress, in progress, testing, and done. So these are states. And these, the number of states and their names, or in practice, as you see here, the columns on what's known as a Kanban board, that can vary a lot between different organizations. The idea is really simple. Whenever you work on an item and it transitions into a new state, you move the sticker forward on the Kanban board. So the board gives a visual overview of everything that's going on. And in practice, most software development Kanban boards are digital, and the notes can have quite a lot of information on them. So the simplicity here is a little bit deceptive. As you know very well, there can typically be many dependencies between requirements, and they are difficult to depict on a Kanban board. But regardless, Kanban is a widely used approach to showing the flow of tasks or requirements through a continuous software development process. One thing that many people forget when they work with and think about Kanban is the central principle of limiting work in progress. This simply means that you set a limit on how many notes or things can be in a single column, how many things you work on in parallel. So the idea here is to keep the flow rapid by working on few things in parallel and finishing them quickly before moving on to something else. So pick one thing, finish it before working on the next thing. Don't start many things at once. In practice, so this work in progress limit really just defines how many stickers or notes you can have in a column at any one time. For example, in this picture, we could define that no more than 5 development tasks can be in progress at any time and no more than 5 tasks in testing. When this is full, this stops us from starting new tasks until we finish the ones that already are in these states. We need to test and implement stuff to get the whole system moving. And while clearly out of scope for this course, this effect of limiting the work in progress on flow has been very well analyzed and shown to be extremely significant in achieving a good flow, and that is making software faster to the level of being able to ship. So this is really central to Kanban. So if you adopt Kanban, don't forget to limit work in progress. Okay, and the last concept I want to touch on today is DevOps. DevOps, there's one paper, one reading for you in the compulsory papers, and then there's one optional reading on DevOps. And DevOps is basically taking what we have talked about previously, but also moving outside of development. So we also include operations in a way that integrates the two. And this also builds heavily on using automated development, deployment, and infrastructure in monitoring tool sets. So while this might sound simple, in many organizations, actually, the development organization and the operations organization responsible for running and keeping the systems up have been completely different. They have been working in their own silos, and making these work well together as one can be quite challenging. So DevOps can be as much about a cultural shift as a technological one with just getting the tools in place. We'll talk more in detail about the DevOps and tooling when we talk about continuous integration and development in the software configuration management model later in the course. But for now, let's just take a quick look at a generic DevOps process. So in the figure here, we can see the development and operations organizations and activities related to these two. To the left, we have development, the dev, in the picture, and to the right, we have operations or ops. The processes are intertwined. So if we start in the middle, we can see that the planning of development is based on feedback from monitoring the system that is actually running. We can get information related to how it's used, problems in use, performance issues, bugs, etc. And this goes into the planning for development. And we also obviously get information for planning from our requirements engineering process. After planning, we code, build, and test the system. And then when it's tested, even at the level of a single change to a single feature, we automatically release and deploy the system into operations, where it's operated and continuously monitored. And then we can very quickly get feedback on the change we made, the effect it had on the system, and given a little longer time perspective, how, for example, it affected the system in use. So in a well-working DevOps system, we have one team responsible for this whole thing. So the DevOps team can have the responsibility both for developing and operating, monitoring the system. And however, in practice, the way it's implemented can vary quite a lot. The degree of integration between development and operations varies widely. Not all organizations are able to have teams that are so integrated that they are able to do all of these activities, though that is, in many cases, the goal, because it's a really efficient way of working. This DevOps model is also key to what many internet companies like Amazon, Facebook, Google, and Netflix are doing. And through this efficient DevOps system, relying heavily on automation and having people integrated in teams this way, they are able to deploy hundreds or even thousands of times daily, thanks to a well-oiled DevOps machinery. But as I said, more on that in later modules. And with that, that's what I have for you this week. I do hope you enjoy the readings. I strongly recommend that you also take a look at the optional readings if you have time. I think they are very valuable to you as well. And with that, I want to wish you the best of luck with your exercises, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next week. And as always, I'm really grateful for any and all feedback you can give to us to help us make the course an even better experience for you. So don't be shy about giving feedback in the modules, in the forums, and we try to respond to any questions you have in Telegram and elsewhere as quickly as possible. So with that said, thanks, have fun, see you next week. Bye for now.